TOEFL review exercise, skills 29 through 31, page 128. Questions 1 through 5. Listen to a discussion in an American history class. The discussion is about an early American coin.
Today, we're going to talk about a coin from early in the history of the United States. It was the first coin issued by the United States government, and it was issued in 1787. This coin was known by two names. It was known as both the Fujio coin and the Franklin coin. First of all, can you tell me why it was called the Fujio coin? Laura?
It was called the Fujio coin because it had the word Fujio on the front of the coin. Fujio is a Latin word which means I fly.
And this coin was also called the Franklin coin. Why was it called the Franklin coin? Was Benjamin Franklin on it?
No, it was called the Franklin coin because Franklin was given credit for the wording on the coin.
Now let's look at the front of the coin. Can you describe the front of it for me, Sarah?
The front of the coin has a sundial in the middle with a sun shining down on the sundial.
Yes, both a sun and a sundial are there. And what else? Laura?
There's a date along one side and the word Fujio along the other side. And then there's some wording at the bottom.
And what words are along the bottom?
The wording along the bottom is mind your business. The coin is called the Franklin coin because Franklin is given credit for this wording.
Now let me describe the back of the coin for you because we don't have a photograph of the back of the coin. On the back of the coin, there's a large circle made up of 13 linked circles, and in the middle of the circle are the words, "We are one."
So there are 13 circles linked into one circle on the back?
Yes. And do you understand the symbolism of the 13 circles linked on the back of the coin?
I think so, particularly with the words, "We are one." This design on the back of the coin symbolizes the 13 original colonies linked into one country.
That's a very appropriate idea for the first coin issued by the United States after the country won its independence.
Number one, by what two names is this coin known? Number two, when was this coin first issued? Number three, for which part of the coin was Franklin given credit? Number four, what do the circles on the back of the coin look like? Number five, what words are on the back of the coin? Questions 6 through 10. Listen to a group of students discussing a presentation for a business class. The discussion is on the marketing of Kleenex.
Our presentation for marketing class is in a few days. Let's see what information we've come up with.
Okay. Our topic for the presentation is the marketing of Kleenex early in its history. We're supposed to show how the early marketing of Kleenex helped to turn it into such a successful product.
There seem to be three clear phases in the early history of Kleenex. First, its use during World War I. Second, its use as a substitute for face cloths during the 1920s. And third, its use as a substitute for handkerchiefs during the 1930s. For the presentation, how about if I talk about the first phase, the use of Kleenex during World War I?
And I'll talk about the second phase, its use as a substitute for face cloths.
And that leaves me with the third phase, the use of Kleenex as a substitute for handkerchiefs.
Now, don't forget that we're supposed to focus on the marketing of the product during each of the phases, not just the history.
Okay. Why don't we review the key points for each of these phases now, with an emphasis on the marketing of the product during each phase?
Sounds like a good idea to me.
So, I'll go first. The first phase of the product was its use during World War I. Cotton was in short supply during the war, so the Kimberly-Clark Company developed Kleenex for use in bandages and gas masks. During this first phase, the company didn't need to worry about marketing the product. Because it was during a war, there was very high demand for the product.
Now for the second phase. After the war, the company had a huge surplus of Kleenex, and it had to market the product. During the 1920s, Kimberly-Clark decided to market Kleenex as a high-end and glamorous substitute for face cloths. It used famous actresses in its marketing, and women who wanted to be glamorous, like the celebrities, used Kleenex in place of face cloths.
Now on to the third phase. While Kimberly-Clark was marketing Kleenex only for use as a face cloth, a number of people began writing in to the company saying that there was another use for Kleenex besides its use as a face cloth. Kleenex was even more useful as a replacement for handkerchiefs. In 1930, the company's marketing department decided to conduct consumer testing to determine if the product should be presented as a face cloth or as a handkerchief. The results of the consumer testing showed that a large majority thought Kleenex was more useful as a handkerchief than as a face cloth.
Number 6. What are the students doing? Number 7. Match the use of the product to the period of time when that use predominated. Number 8. What was the situation at Kimberly-Clark at the end of World War I? Number 9. How did Kimberly-Clark learn that its product had a use as a handkerchief? Number 10. Match the use of the product to the marketing strategy associated with that use. Questions 11 through 15. Listen to a discussion by a group of students in an oceanography class. The discussion is on atolls.
In this course, we have discussed a number of the ocean's unusual features. Today, we're going to discuss atolls and how they're formed. First, can you tell me what an atoll is? Beth?
An atoll is a ring-shaped mass of coral and algae.
That's right. An atoll is made of coral and algae. And where are atolls found? Jim?
Atolls are found in tropical and subtropical areas of the ocean where the water temperature is fairly warm. The coral and reef-building algae grow best in fairly warm water.
Now let's look at how atolls are formed. We'll look at a series of three diagrams and discuss what is happening in each. This diagram shows the first step in the process. What does the diagram show? Linda?
This diagram shows a new volcanic island that has formed.
And what's growing around the volcanic island?
A coral reef is growing around this new volcanic island.
Now let's look at the second diagram. Beth, can you describe what's happening in this diagram?
The second diagram shows that the volcanic island has started to erode. It's worn down.
And what's happened with the coral reef while the volcanic island has eroded?
The coral reef has continued to grow.
Now let's look at the third diagram in the series. What's happening in this diagram, Jim?
In this diagram, you can see that the volcanic island has worn down so far that it's below the level of the ocean. The coral has built up even further, so the coral is above the water, and the remains of the volcano are underwater.
Yes, and it's at this stage when the ring of coral is called an atoll. The volcano has sunk, and there's a pool of water inside the atoll. Now, what do we call the pool of water that remains inside an atoll? Linda?
The pool of water inside the atoll is called a lagoon.
That's correct. The body of water inside an atoll is called a lagoon. You seem to understand quite clearly how atolls result when coral reefs around volcanic islands continue to grow as the volcanic islands themselves diminish. That's all for today. I'll see you next class.
Number 11. What is an atoll made of? Number 12. Which of these is an atoll? Number 13. Where do atolls tend to grow? Number 14. In the discussion, the process of the formation of atolls is discussed. Summarize the process by putting the steps in order. Number 15. Where is the lagoon? Academic Lectures, Computer. Page 135. Example from the computer TOEFL test. Listen to a lecture in a history class. The professor is talking about the history of Alcatraz Island.
Alcatraz is a large, rocky island in San Francisco Bay. It was named in 1775 by a Spanish explorer who first saw the rocky island when it was covered with pelicans. He named the island after the pelicans. The word Alcatraz is actually a derivation of the Spanish word for pelican. You can see Alcatraz Island in this photo. The island was acquired by the United States in 1848 when it was turned over to the military. It was first made into a fort to protect San Francisco because of its location due north of San Francisco, just inside the entrance to San Francisco Bay. It was later turned into a military prison, and it remained part of the military system until 1934, when it was changed into a federal prison. Alcatraz served as a federal prison for 29 years, from 1934 until the prison was closed in 1963. During the time that it served as a federal prison, a number of famous prisoners served time there, including Al Capone, Machine Gun Kelly, and Robert Stroud, who was better known as the Birdman of Alcatraz because of the studies he conducted there on birds. In 1963, the prison at Alcatraz was shut down, and for the next 9 years, the entire island was closed off and no one was allowed to go there. Then, in 1972, Alcatraz became part of the National Park System, and today the island is open to anyone who wishes to venture out there.
Number 1. When was Alcatraz Island given its current name? Number 2. What was Alcatraz named after? Number 3. Where is Alcatraz located? Number 4. What is stated in the lecture about Robert Stroud? Number 5. How long did Alcatraz fulfill each of these functions? Number 6. Put these people in the order in which they most likely arrived at Alcatraz. Page 140. Example 1 from the computer TOEFL test. Listen to a part of a lecture in a health class. The professor is talking about burns.
Today I'll be talking about different kinds of burns. First-degree burns are characterized by some redness to the surface of the skin, as well as pain and swelling. In second-degree burns, the upper layers of skin are reddish and damaged, and there is evidence of loss of body fluids. In third-degree burns, the skin is whitish or charred, and there is damage to tissues beneath the skin.
What characterizes each of these types of burns? Page 141. Example 2 from the computer TOEFL test. Listen to a part of a lecture in a class on the history of aviation. The lecture is on early ballooning.
Today, I'll be discussing some major events in the early history of ballooning. The first important event took place in June of 1783, when the Montgolfier brothers of France sent up a large smoke-filled cloth balloon without any passengers. Only a few months later, in the same year, French scientist Jean-François Pilatre de Rozier became the first person to go up in a balloon. 2 years later, French balloonist Jean-Pierre Blanchard and American doctor John Jeffries made the first balloon flight across the English Channel. It was not until 1793 that the first balloon ascent in the United States took place, when Jean-Pierre Blanchard gave a demonstration in front of a large crowd that included President George Washington.
The professor describes a series of events. Put the events in order. Page 142. Example 3 from the computer TOEFL test. Listen to part of a lecture in a geography class. The lecture is on major rivers of the world.
Today, I'll be talking about the major rivers and river systems of the world. The four longest are the Nile River in Africa, which is 4,145 miles long, the Amazon River in South America, which is 4,007 miles long, the Mississippi River system in North America, which is 3,710 miles long, and the Yangtze River in China, which is 3,436 miles long.
the professor discusses major rivers of the world. Put these rivers in order, from longest to shortest. Exercise 32, page 143. Listen to each academic lecture and try to determine how the information in the passage is organized. Question 1. Listen to a lecture in a geography class. The professor is talking about lakes.
Today, we're going to look at three of the world's largest lakes: the Caspian Sea, Lake Superior, and Lake Baikal. Each of these lakes was formed in a different way, and these three lakes clearly demonstrate the three major ways that a lake can form. The first lake I'm going to discuss is the Caspian Sea, which is the largest inland body of water in the world. The Caspian Sea is a saltwater lake between Europe and Asia. It's believed that this lake was originally connected to the world's oceans, which would account for its saltwater content. As the Earth's plates moved, this arm of the ocean was cut off. The next lake I'm going to discuss is Lake Superior, which is one of the Great Lakes in North America, and is the largest freshwater lake in the world. Lake Superior, along with the other Great Lakes, was formed by glaciers. Glaciers covered the northern part of North America until 10,000 years ago, and were responsible for carving out the Great Lakes, including Lake Superior. The third lake I'm going to discuss is Lake Baikal, which is in Russia. Lake Baikal formed when the Earth's crust broke apart at a fault. Because Lake Baikal formed over a split in the Earth's crust, it is a very deep lake, the deepest lake in the world. Lake Baikal is so deep that even though its surface area is much smaller than the surface area of Lake Superior, it could hold the water of all the Great Lakes combined.
Number 1. A. What type of organization is used in the first passage? B. What are the main points in the organization? Question 2. Listen to a lecture in an archaeology class. The professor is talking about the formation of fossils.
Fossils are generally considered to be the remains of plants and animals that have turned to stone. There are a number of processes by which a living organism can be converted to a fossil, but each of the known processes generally has a number of characteristics in common. After an animal dies, its soft tissues break down. After the soft tissues have decomposed, only the hard parts of the body, such as the bones and teeth, remain. Over a long period of time, the hard tissues become buried under layers of sediment. As more layers of sediment cover the hard tissue, it becomes buried more and more deeply. When the bones are buried deep in the earth, they come into contact with groundwater, and a change begins to occur. Minerals from the groundwater seep into the bones, and over long periods of time, the minerals eventually replace the bones. This is the actual step when fossilization occurs, when minerals from the groundwater have replaced the actual hard tissue from the original body. The buried, fossilized remains, which are buried deep within the earth, may then make their way back to the surface. As the earth moves, the remains are pushed around. If they get closer to the surface, they may either actually reach the surface, where they can be seen, or get near enough to the surface where they can be dug out.
Number 2. A. What type of organization is used in the second passage? B. What are the main points in the organization? Question 3. Listen to a lecture in a nutrition class. The professor is talking about olive oil.
Today I'll be talking about various types of olive oil and the processes by which they are produced. Olive oil can be produced by a cold process or by a heated process. The highest quality oils are produced by the cold press process. Let me explain the cold press process. Olive oil can be made without heat by pressing very ripe olives. Because no heat is used in this process, the color and taste of the olive oil is not affected. What results from this first pressing of the olives is called virgin olive oil. You may also have heard of extra virgin olive oil. Like virgin olive oil, extra virgin olive oil is from the first cold pressing. Extra virgin olive oil is made from special olives with a low acid content. Thus, extra virgin olive oil has a lower acid level than virgin oil, but they both come from the first cold pressing of the olives. After the olives have been pressed once, they are pressed again numerous times. Olive oil that comes from a later pressing is called cold pressed olive oil. It is not called virgin olive oil because it comes from a later pressing. Now we'll talk about pure olive oil. Some olive oil is called pure olive oil rather than virgin oil or cold pressed olive oil. If an olive oil is called pure olive oil, this means that it contains only olive oil, but it was not obtained through a cold press process. A product called pure olive oil has often been obtained from a heat process, which has an effect on the color and taste of the oil. The final type of olive oil I'd like to mention briefly is light olive oil. When the label of a bottle of olive oil says that it is light olive oil, this probably means that the oil in the bottle is not pure olive oil. Some other type of oil has been added to the olive oil to lighten the taste.
Number 3. A. What type of organization is used in the third passage? B. What are the main points in the organization? The program continues on the next cassette.